Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 200 of Her. Just a moment. Those clicking glasses are my champagne here. This is the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her body, her mind, her life, and today, her anxiety. Yeah, this is really going to be a show that hits home for so many of us out there. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils, customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. We look forward to hearing from you and reviewing all of your feedback. Just love to hear from you. What do you think about when you listen to these wonderful discussions we have on the Her podcast? I'm all ears, so make sure when we're done to give us that rate and review. All right, it's time for her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
You know, raise your hand out there in her podcast land if you feel anxiety. Just about everybody. And the rest of you are in gross denial. I know that. And then of that anxiety, how many of you actually have something called a panic attack, and it's a sudden, intense episode of fear or dread accompanied by physical symptoms such as a pounding heart, sweating, trembling, or shaking, lightheadedness, feeling faint, shortness of breath, choking sensations, nausea, abdominal distress, chest pain, cold and hot chills, numbness and tingling. I could go on. It's all bad, and it's all like a horrible, unreal feeling. Let's tear this apart here a little bit. Let's learn more about this. You know why? Because women are about 20 times as likely to have problems with anxiety and panic attacks than men. And we're going to figure out why. Our expert is Dr. Lotta McGinn. Now, Dr. McGinn is the author of Treatment Plans and Interventions for Anxiety and Depressive Disorders, Treatment of Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. Now, she is the co-founder of Cognitive Behavioral Consultants. She's a tenured professor of psychology and the director of the clinical program at the Firkhoff Graduate School of Psychology at Yeshiva University. She's a past president of the Academy of Cognitive Therapy and the International Association for Cognitive Psychotherapy. Dr. McGinn, welcome to the Her podcast.
Well, thank you, Pamela, for that lovely introduction and for inviting me to be a part of Her. I'm very excited
awesome.
To be on.
All right. I made it clear from the beginning. I'm incredibly interested on behalf of our mostly female listeners, this whole issue of anxiety and panic disorder. First of all, why are women more likely than men to really be experiencing more anxiety throughout life?
Well, I think it's true that across the anxiety disorders, women suffer from anxiety and depression more likely than men. It's not clear why that is the case. There are certainly, theories about why that might be. Some suggest that it might be hormonal differences between the two, and that might be a part of it. The other thought is that perhaps women are far more likely to acknowledge having anxiety and come into treatment. So it isn't quite clear, but it definitely is more common in women. It's not clear. It's not that there's a gene or anything that's been identified, but that's what we know so far.
Okay. And then that's great. Now, let's go to the place of when anxiety really begins to manifests itself in a big way, and that's through a panic attack. Exactly what is a panic attack, and what can a woman trigger this? What's going on with a panic attack?
Well, panic attacks are actually quite common. It's essentially another way of saying a very sudden, intense episode of fear. Biologically speaking, a panic attack is really the equivalent of what we call the fight-flight response. So it's a mechanism that our bodies have developed to protect us from danger. So when our minds or our brain sense danger in the environment, a panic attack comes over, meaning fear. We call it fear in that case. And that basically makes a lot of changes, a chemical, hormonal changes to our body so that we can actually flee or fight the danger. So anxiety is protective. A panic attack is called that because it occurs in people who are not in danger. So it's like a false alarm. So it's like a fire alarm going off even though there's no fire.
Why does it occur? I mean, can someone inadvertently trigger this, or is it random? What happens?
Well, people who suffer from anxiety are more predisposed because of their background, whether it's the genetics, there's a moderate genetic basis for it, family environment. There is your own temperament that you come into the world with, you know, experiences you have as a child. But we know that people who suffer from panic disorder, which is different from a panic attack, are more likely, they have a more hyper-reactive, stress system, so what we call a noradrenergic system. So they have a more hyperactive. So the things that might stress the rest of us out but not lead to a panic attack could trigger that in people who are vulnerable to it. So something that happens that's stressful is most likely the onset of a panic attack for people who are vulnerable.
Well, what is a panic disorder then?
A panic disorder is really someone who develops fear of panic attacks and then begins to get so afraid of them. They worry that when they come on, they're going to die, they're going to go crazy, lose control. And so, ironically, the more they worry about it, the more afraid they become, the panic attacks start coming more and more. And as a result, they might even change their behavior associated with that so that they might start avoiding doing things where they're afraid they might trigger a panic attack. So then it starts to affect their lives. And then the geographic zone that they want to be in becomes very narrow because they're afraid of being in places. So a panic disorder is the fear of a panic attack, the physical sensations of panic, and a worry about what might happen to them if they have it.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, Dr. McGinn, I'm thinking to myself of probably, I don't know, you know, the one main panic attack I think I've ever had. And that was many years ago when I was, I had signed up for a board review course. Now, you know, it's a real party. This is for the internal medicine boards. And as everyone knows, it's just one of the hardest things ever to take. And so I had flown to, I think it was Miami, for a very special course. And I was studying like mad. And, you know, it's a 3-day test that we eventually take. But oh my gosh, the textbooks we have to memorize and back and forth. Well, long story short, there I was, and I was in the course studying away, you know, taking the pretests and, you know, all of that, and just spending my entire time there just 24/7 with a whole lot of people who'd sign up for the same thing. And one day we were in a shuttle back to the hotel because there was just tons of us pre-meds who were getting ready to do this big test in a number of months. And there I was. It was a warm day. I'm in a shuttle bus. All the doors are locked. The windows are up because it's a shuttle. I'm sitting next to the window, and it hit like a ton of bricks. I felt like I was going to suffocate, and that all I wanted to do was break through the window so I could breathe fresh air. And it was one of the most frightening experiences of my entire life. Now, clearly, I was under a terrific amount of stress, as was everybody else there. And I guess this is the way I did it. I learned a little trick, and I'm sure that, you know, you've played with this yourself, but I just, all by my little lonesome a number of years ago, figured it out. And that is to get my mind off all of these fight and flight thoughts, very, you know, panicky thoughts. I literally focused on something and started thinking about that, erasing everything else. So I would, as we drove by something, I would look at a car, at the intense red of the car, and I would say, how red is that car? And then I would just get, you know, who are the people in the car? What's going on? I literally just got off the whole panic thing. That was my desperate way to stop it. And son of a gun, it worked. And before I knew it, it was gone. What did I actually do there, Dr. McGinn?
Well, I guess for someone who suffers from panic disorder, that would be called a distraction.
Yes.
That, you know, worked for you. And I think it's possible that you're vulnerability for panic disorder was not high. But I think when people who actually are vulnerable to developing the disorder, I mean, as you said, you were stressed out, you had a panic attack, and then you sort of moved on. For people who actually have the vulnerability, distraction alone will not only not be sufficient, but it will actually make it worse in the long run.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. How fascinating.
Well, the reason is because it's a fight-flight response. So basically, right, your brain is saying, you know, Pamela, you're in danger. And so here, let me give you flight because you have to run away from danger. So that's why you felt like climbing out of your windows, because it was really the fight-flight response kicking in at the time. Now, if there really truly was a danger, let's say there was a lion standing in front of you, your mind would just accept it, the physical reactions you were having, and move on. But when you are in the presence of no danger, you're a rational person, you look around and you have this violent reaction in your body, your mind starts to invent things where you start to say, oh my God, maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe I'm going to die. Maybe I'm going out of control. But essentially, the true treatment for panic disorder is really to help your brain see and only fire a fight-flight response in the presence of true danger. That's the actual treatment for it.
Wow. Okay. Now, all right. I know that a boatload of women out there are saying, okay, how do I start to curb the anxiety? How do I start to, let me back off for a second. I have a really interesting question that was posed by one of my people who knew that we were going to do this segment. This whole issue of past trauma, whether it was childhood trauma, adolescent and or adolescent, or trauma period. How does trauma, like trauma-focused, trauma-based, you know, therapy, how does this figure into anxiety and panic?
Well, suffering from a trauma is, you know, trauma appears to be a non-specific risk factor for developing anxiety, depression, and so on, and many other conditions. It's not a sufficient one. But it is a non-specific risk factor. So that means it makes you have a higher chance of it. People who have traumatic events, if they develop post-traumatic stress disorder, then they would use what we called the trauma-focused CBT. For people who suffer from panic disorder, even if it was triggered by a trauma, and that's not to say that it always is, it can, but it doesn't mean that it is, you would still need cognitive behavior therapy for panic disorder. So the treatment would not be something, unless you actually had symptoms of PTSD, you would not actually be getting that treatment.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. You know, because I know that trauma obviously sets you up for being much more sensitive to fight and flight and anxiety. So there you have it. Mm-hmm. So given all of that, What are things that our listeners can do right now? Clearly, one of the things they need to know is, when should they see a therapist versus what do you do at home in your own life to maybe begin to make a dent into levels of anxiety and panic? How do we approach this now, Dr. McGinn?
I would say that if you have had a panic attack and or had it here and there, but it's not really interfering with your life, then you may not need to go for treatment. But people who suffer multiple panic attacks have developed a fear of having future panic attacks, have changed their behaviors and their lives to accommodate that, meaning that they're not doing the things that they would like to do because they're afraid they might get a panic attack, then you do need treatment.
Uh-huh.
And so I would say even before it starts to affect your behavior, if you have a fear of panic attacks and the panic attacks are increasing, it's time to get treatment.
So people have asked me then, what about things like breathing exercises? What about meditation? What have you found that helps?
Well, the treatment for panic, you know, the breathing exercises are a part of it because it helps regulate oxygen and carbon dioxide, and so that can be calming. However, it's not wise to use it to stop a panic attack or to use it as a distraction for the panic, because actually that will ultimately wind up negatively impacting you because it will inadvertently convince your brain that you're in danger. The focus of the treatment for panic disorder is really to help your brain realize that anxiety is protective. It's not dangerous. You're just having it at moments when you are not in danger. But that if you get afraid of the panic attack, your brain is going to keep on producing more anxiety because that's all the brain knows what to do. To cope with anxiety is to give you more anxiety because anxiety is protective and is a reaction to danger. So the actual treatment for it might involve breathing exercises, but it will teach you thinking exercises that will essentially rewire your brain, if you will, to see that, you know, you're not, your brain, to rewire your brain to show that you're not in danger, and also help you do extra behavioral exercises called exposure to actually confront situations that you're avoiding. So that would really be the most helpful.
Now, is this all done under the auspices and supervision of a psychologist like yourself?
Yes, somebody who is trained in cognitive behavior therapy and specializes in anxiety disorders, that will be the person that you want to see. If you are having panic attacks and you've never been to a medical doctor, if you've never been, you know, it's good to go and find out. The most common other rule out would be for a young woman who's most likely to suffer from it is a thyroid condition. Once a doctor rules out any physical basis, it's best not to keep going back and back and taking unnecessary medical tests over and over again. At that point, cognitive behavior therapy has been shown to be very effective, so that would be the next place for you to go.
Could you please define and describe cognitive behavioral therapy as opposed to other forms of therapy like DBT and others? Because I know that a lot of these terms are thrown around. You're an expert. Let's hear from an expert as to what this term actually means.
Cognitive behavioral therapy is really the name for a whole host of treatments that focus on modifying emotional conditions by teaching people exercises and skills that modify people's ways of thinking and sort of seeing the world, and also changing people's behaviors. Some of it also involves teaching you physiological exercises to, you know, if you have high levels of arousal. DBT, or dialectical behavior therapy, is a type of cognitive behavior therapy for people who suffer from excessive dysregulation, who might have borderline personality disorder, or adolescents who are depressed and suicidal, or who, you know, do engage in sort of non-suicidal self-injury. So that's a specific type of CBT. But for panic disorder, the treatment of choice is cognitive behavior therapy for panic disorder.
Okay. So when someone engages in cognitive behavioral therapy, is this a long-term therapy? Give people an idea of how this works.
Yeah, I would say cognitive behavior therapy is certainly briefer than other types of psychotherapies. It is a psychotherapy. And it depends on the condition. You know, for something like a specific phobia, maybe somebody's afraid of, you know, dogs or so on, it could be treated very rapidly, you know, within a few weeks. For someone with panic disorder, you know, it could take 4 to 6 months. If there's nothing else going on, if you do exercises in between, if you have other conditions going on, or, you know, you don't do the exercises in between sessions, it could take longer. But generally, it is a shorter-term treatment.
Very good. Very good. Okay, because I want people to understand, you know, exactly what this would entail. You know, and then when is anxiety just sort of normal anxiety? And when should you really worry?
I mean, anxiety is normal. I mean, basically, research shows that, you know, you need a certain amount of anxiety to function. Otherwise, you wouldn't even get out of bed. And so, for example, if you have anxiety and you have an upcoming test or exam like you did, you know, the anxiety can be a way of helping you pay attention. Ultimately, it's only an alarm. It's an emotional alarm. And it's saying, gee, Pamela, you have your boards coming up. You've got to study, you know, so that it's like a fire alarm that goes off. It's kind of annoying and it's, you know, it keeps at you until you do it. And the best way would be to actually then go ahead and study. So it's very adaptive and it's a wonderful system our bodies have to help us protect us from danger because you run faster, you would fight better. You are sort of peak of your game when you have moderate levels of anxiety. It's just that if the anxiety goes beyond a certain point, then it can impact your functioning. Maybe you can't concentrate as well. It's not dangerous at all. It's harmless. But if, let's say, it goes beyond moderate amounts, then it could, you know, make you more vulnerable to just like, you know, getting colds or, you know, people get stressed out. They get sick more often, you know, things like that. So it's not a harmful condition. It's just that it is something that can affect your mental health and change your behaviors and impact your life in a way and make you function less effectively so that if it becomes more than just mild or moderate and it's impacting your functioning, then it is time to get help.
You know, it's interesting. Oftentimes I'll use one particular element, and that's sleep, to understand where the anxiety is in that person's life, because I have found that if anxiety is bad enough, you're not sleeping. You may sleep for an hour or two, and then boom, you've got that wakefulness thing going on, and you can't continue to sleep, and you toss and you turn, and it's a nightmare, and back and forth. I have found that when sleep is impacted, that's a wake-up call. What do you think of that idea?
No, absolutely. I think sleep is something that can be disrupted when we suffer from anxiety, depression, and so on. So it's a great thing to focus on as one of the ways that it's affecting your functioning. If you're not sleeping well because of your anxiety, then that is a sign that you need some help.
You know, it's an interesting thing, Dr. McGinn. Most of my work at the National Institutes of Health as a senior research scientist was actually working with stress hormone. We actually looked very closely at the master hormone in stress in the brain, CRH. And one of the things we knew was that, you know, stress hormone, cortisol, as you're very well aware, follows what we call kind of a sinusoidal wave, you know, throughout the day. It's a pattern. So what really wakes you up in the morning is that in combination with, you know, our little pal norepinephrine, which seems to like to hang out with cortisol. And then as the day waxes and wanes, you should be decreasing the total levels so that eventually you're preparing your mind for sleep. And for every single human being, there's a threshold for cortisol at nighttime. And if you're below that threshold, you're able to sleep. If you're above that threshold, good luck. It's just not going to happen. We actually studied an extremely rare condition where cortisol never came down. and I didn't follow sinusoidal wave. People never slept. It was a nightmare. And we actually had to use very draconian, you know, highly experimental procedures to actually block stress hormone, which you have to do so carefully because it's life-threatening. And we were able to get people to sleep for the first time in their life through an entire evening. Very, really fascinating stuff. This is my mentor, Dr. George Koussos. Yeah. We sequence CRH, and we spent a lot of time playing with this whole thing. That's why sleep and cortisol in the back of my mind, they always go hand in hand. And the job is to be able to create an environment, mentally, physically, otherwise, to be able to get that stress hormone level below that threshold that's unique to you so that you can actually sleep well that evening. And that ain't going to happen if you have anxiety and panic out of control. And that's why I always explain this to, you know, people I work with like that. It's kind of neat stuff. And that's why I love what you've done here with the book and with your wonderful work. And I so congratulate you and want to express gratitude on the behalf of all of our listeners for your wonderful work here, Dr. McGinn, in this whole field. Everyone, the title of the book is Treatment Plans and Interventions for Anxiety and Depressive Disorders, Treatment of Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. I just absolutely love this, and I so thank you. Run on over to her websites, CBC, that stands for Cognitive Behavioral Consultant, CBC-psychology.com. And then, of course, Dr. Lata, that's L-A-T-A, McGinn, M-C-G-I-N-N.com, to be able to learn more about Dr. McGinn's wonderful work. Dr. McGinn, thank you again for being on the HER podcast.
Well, thank you, Pamela. That was absolutely a delight speaking with you.
Awesome. And everyone out there, you heard the message all about anxiety, panic in your life, and what you can do about it. So now I want you to take a minute, run on over to iTunes, rate and review this show, because I want to hear what you have to think about this. You know why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek. I'm host of the HER podcast. Follow me on Facebook, please, at Dr. Pam Peek, or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the HER podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and hey, stay well.